Emily Score, CEO of Growth Energy.
Emily, tell me about a summit happening in the Twin Cities this week involving more than 15 countries from the Pacific area, Asia Pacific, and why you're talking to them about renewable fuels, specifically ethanol.
We're having a great conversation here in Minneapolis. The U.S. Grains Council, Growth Energy, Renewable Fuels Association, we've convened a meeting with some of the key voices and stakeholders and industry leaders and policymakers throughout Asia Pacific, as well as government officials on our own side of the water. And the conversation we're talking about is how biofuels are good for every economy that across the globe. And so much of the conversation is we are sharing our technical expertise, our experience in terms of what biofuels has done for the American economy, for the American farmer, for American energy independence, and for the American consumer. We're sharing that experience. Other countries also are sharing their experience with one another. So the dialogue is not simply U.S. telling Pacific. It's everybody talking to one another. What is Japan's experience? What is Vietnam's experience and the Philippines' experience and India and so forth? It's a wonderful exchange and dialogue.
So give me an idea of what some of these countries are providing for feedback, their experiences with ethanol, some things that you would consider highlights.
Well, you know, one of the points of conversation has been the fact that the goal of ethanol use in any economy should be increased domestic production. And so I was talking with many individuals from the Philippines, for example, where their goal in increased ethanol use is also to increase their own domestic production from an energy security standpoint. And any country that's ramping up in the short term, they may not have enough production capabilities, and the U.S. is very happy to be a backfill. The U.S. is the world's largest exporter of ethanol. But in the long run, these countries, as they embrace ethanol, as they see how it's good for their domestic economy in so many ways, ultimately they may increase their own production capability, and that's a good thing.
How about those conversations with U.S. officials talking about the economic impact of ethanol and how that could correlate to a nation like Japan or Australia even?
Well, I mean, you know, the economics, I mean, there was a presentation earlier today by some U.S. government officials and how the economics work in that we are able to both feed and fuel our country and other countries as well. And so that's part of the conversation. I think that's an important part of the dialogue. You look at a country like Japan, just in April, the Japanese government announced a new biofuels policy that will allow for the first time imports of ETBE made from U.S. corn-based ethanol. So Japan had done an evaluation of their greenhouse gas reduction goals, and they've looked at the improvements that we've made in our efficiencies and our production, and they're saying, you know what, we're going to let U.S. ethanol qualify for the ethanol that we'll be using in our country. So this is a new market that we've never had open to us before.
Part of the battle domestically has been fighting off some of those misconceptions about ethanol. Are there some misconceptions globally that you're addressing this week?
It's very interesting how myths and misconceptions do migrate across borders and leap over oceans. One of the questions that I heard from someone this morning is, why is E10 the threshold? Why is that looked at as a ceiling? And a lot of that comes down to competition. The more ethanol you use, the more you are displacing toxic additives that are petroleum-based. And so this is something that the petroleum industry does not want to see happen. And in a competitive environment, you know, misinformation is going to be thrown out. So questions about how much ethanol is good for an engine, and so that's where the Brazilian experience is great. Brazil, actually, the country has done some research on just how much ethanol they're using, well above an E15 in the same cars that we're driving. And they're willing to share that information with representatives from all of the countries that were with us today. So that type of information sharing and dialogue, it's very good to dispel myths and misperceptions and make sure that the stakeholders and policymakers understand the facts from the people who have been working with ethanol day in, day out in our country.
A lot of the myths and misconceptions have been spread by big oil. I'm curious if there are other countries where a similar fight could be occurring if ethanol starts to gain some ground, and you would have those petroleum interests that would be trying to suppress renewable fuels?
That could very well happen. I'll be honest, I haven't heard of the dynamic in another country being quite as intense as it is in our country. I mean, you look at a country like Brazil, they're using much more ethanol than we are, so it's something for us to aspire to. But a lot of countries right now are at the stage where they're going from blending maybe 2% or 5% ethanol into their fuel mix to a goal of a 10%. So they're looking to, you know, they're a little bit behind us in terms of their blending goals. And so they're still kind of a ramping up in that way.
Emily, while I've got you on the phone, what have the last few months been like when the White House announces sometimes at the last minute that they're going to have meetings regarding the renewable fuel standard, and we start to hear rumor and speculation about what was discussed, what was promised or not promised? What's that been like for Growth Energy?
It's been a lot of time trying to separate fact from fiction. And I will say every time there has been a meeting at the White House, we've had, I think, 7 meetings about the renewable fuel standard at the White House in recent months. There is a lot of speculation and misinformation, and everybody is trying to spin one way or the other. I mean, what we know right now is that the president has pledged to year-round sales of E15. That is something he wants to see happen. He wants to see it happen, absolutely. And so we look forward to, in the continued conversations between USDA and EPA, both agencies following through on the president's pledge. So the fact that he embraces the importance of year-round consumer access to higher blends of ethanol is phenomenal. That's wonderful. What we don't like to hear is that there's some need to give the petroleum industry something. We don't need to be cutting a deal. You don't have to have a give for both sides. And I think that's sometimes the president's attitude toward this conversation. So that's what we're spending a lot of our time saying. If you want to do right by the American rural economy and the American consumer, give American consumers year-round access to E15, and they've got to do a regulatory fix to do that. You do that, you'll blend more biofuels, you'll keep gasoline prices down. And I might add, gasoline prices this summer are expected to be at a 4-year high. So we want year-round sales of that 15% ethanol blend.